We welcome you to another live edition of the Sports Box, brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And by our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and check them out at www.crowdplayapp.com for details. Ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Welcome, everybody, to another bonus edition of Cage by IQ. I'm your host, D-Bake, and as always, just like last week, I'm joined by the Active Geek host, Jim DeLulo. How's it going, Jim?
Hey, man. How are you? I'm doing great.
And this week, we will be previewing UFC Fight Night, Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis. When you see the card for the first time, what was your first reaction of what you're going to be able to see this coming Saturday?
There's a lot of difference in opponents. You know what I mean? Obviously, you're highlighting Blaydes and Lewis, but there's a lot of contenders in here too with Kunitskaya and Vieira. You have some up-and-comings like Aspinall going up against the legend Arlovski. You've got some people making their debuts, like not their debuts, but people who are riding high win streaks like Halls and Imavov. So there's a lot to take in this week, a lot of good fights. I'm expecting a lot of good fights, a lot of conflicting styles as well.
Yeah, when I first look at this, I see three heavyweight fights right off the bat. And then I see two small division matches mixed in, which is a recipe for success, because whenever you got heavyweights, you got fireworks.
Yeah,
because you get a lot of knockouts. So anytime you can get that many heavyweights onto like a fight night like this, it's going to be successful, because you're going to see people tune in just to see the punching and the knockouts, because that's what Dana White wants. And then usually that's what Dana White gets. But to get started with the first fight on the main card, we got two heavyweights that will be going at it in Andre Arlovski against Tom Aspinall. How do you feel about this fight?
Well, you've got Arlovski, who's 30-19, and every time I feel like he's done, he shows up. Like with Tanner Boser, I thought Tanner Boser was going to come in and beat him. He went to decision. With Felipe Lins, same thing, division. He's 3-2 his last five, with his big losses coming from Rozenstruik and Augusto Sakai, two up-and-coming beasts in that stacked division. Where Aspinall, he's been on a five-fight tear, doesn't get out of the first round. Last five, it's ground and pound, KO, knockouts, injuries, knockouts. He's continuously stopping people early. So I see with Arlovski, he needs to keep the distance, utilize his leg kicks, and kind of be a little more tricky than he has been in his previous fights. Whereas Aspinall needs to set the pace, establish more control, get in there quick, because if you go to a distance with Arlovski, the vet's always going to win. And he needs to Aspinall needs to win in dirty boxing. So I think Aspinall is going to knock out Arlovski. That's my pick.
Yeah, and like my first impression of this fight is you got a savvy veteran, and then you got a strong up and comer who wants to make a mark and have that solidified win that shows that he's ready to compete with like the top contenders. Yeah. And then you got Tom Aspinall, first off, who is 2-0 in UFC with two first round stoppages after being a standout in Cage Warriors, which is a thing in England over there that he was at. He's never gone to the decision. And just like you said, he has five fights that ended by knockout, which ended in wins for him. He has a high striking accuracy and speedy strikes, and his power is undeniable. He needs to show good technique, though, in this fight, because we haven't seen him pass round one. So we don't know if his gas tank is good or if he can last and keep the pace up going after that, because he's never been gone that far, because he's always had quick fights. He fights and trains out of Team K Coban, England, and has a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. And two notable guys that he trains with are Darren Till, which you kind of see, and then Tyson Fury. He trains with him. That's where he's learned some of his boxing and dirty boxing from, is Tyson Fury. He's been a big advocate of Fury. You see Fury in the media. A lot of people hated him, and now they're warmed up to him. Aspinall has come out and said that he's been a big influence on his career, even though he's MMA and Fury is a boxer. He's learned a lot from him, and he said he's like the nicest guy. And that's where he gets his accuracy from, like from what he's learned from Fury. Then you've got a contrast from him in Andre Arlovsky, who fights out American Top Team. He's 3-2 in the last 5 fights. His 2 losses are to current contenders in the division. And then he tends to move forward no matter what and doesn't go backwards. That's kind of been his MO lately. That's why he's kind of been hot and cold, because he tends to not move backwards to save himself. He just keeps moving forward. And then that's how he's been caught in the past, is he just is too stubborn to start moving backwards. He just goes in one direction. He's still a striker, but he's become more passive and relies on outlasting his opponents now. That's why you see him going to decision now. He kind of saves some of his energy, only hits somebody when he needs to, and then he tries to let them gas out, and then him like just win by outlasting them, and then
he's become a point fighter.
Yeah, in this fight, I agree with you. I see Tom Aspinall winning by knockout. I see it in the first round. I see him going on an explosion right away. He's going to want to win quick, because you don't know what's going to happen as the fight goes on. We don't know if he's going to last that long. So I feel like he has the accuracy and he has the explosiveness to finish this fight in the first round.
Yeah.
And I have him. Yeah.
Go on. I'm sorry.
I have him, but if this fight were to go past that, I could see Arlovsky winning by decision.
The big thing that you said when you were talking about Aspinall is that he's a BJJ black belt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we haven't seen his groundwork.
No.
In the 2 fights that we've seen with UFC, it's all first round KOs, ground and pound, stuff like that. We don't see him, you know, dropping the guard. We don't see him shooting for takedowns. So if this goes longer, Arlovsky, who still has a chin at 42, a lot of people doubt that, but we've seen him in these wars with these last few fights. Aspinall can just take him to the ground, and Arlovsky's not used to that in this current heavyweight division. You know what I mean? When was the last time he fought Blades or he fought Cormier? He's not fighting wrestlers. He's not fighting Verdum, who's the BJJ black belt. He's fighting strikers, and he's become the Michael Johnson of the division. He's the gatekeeper. And everybody has to go through Arlovsky. And if they go through him, then maybe they go to Overeem. But like I said earlier, man, every time I pick against Arlovsky, he wins. So I'm glad I'm not a betting man when it comes to money. And it's all fun bets.
Aspinall, his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's just unknown right now because we haven't seen him use it. So I don't want to comment on it and then be like he's going to use it and then he doesn't have to. I want to see that first, but you could see him go longer in the fight, kind of be more patient, and then actually use that to wear down Arlovsky.
Can you imagine if he shoots for a takedown first round? It's like right out the gate.
Yeah.
Fakes a knee, comes back, boom, right into a takedown. Could be crazy.
Yeah. It would set the pace, and then he might not have to use all that energy on striking.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of possibilities with him. And that's why he's one of my big prospects going into this year. Because if he gets this, he's ranked 24, and I think Olasky's 16 right now.
Yeah.
So he could shoot right into that top 15 after this, and then all he needs is one more fight against like Augusto Sakai.
Yeah.
That could just launch him right into the top 10.
Yeah. He kind of reminds me of Royzenstrike.
Yeah,
a little bit, but with more speed, if that's even believable, because Royzenstrike, for as big as he is, can move like a cheetah.
Yeah,
and Aspinall is pretty quick too. You said that in the beginning.
But so moving on to the second fight on this card, the 6 fights on it, We got Nazarene Imabov against Phil Haas. What do you expect from this fight?
Yeah, this was, you and I talked before we went on about the confusion with this, because earlier this wasn't in the main card. It was one of the prelim highlighters. But this is the battle of people riding top five or five fight win streaks. Phil Haas has 5 in a row. He's 9-2. Nasruddin has 9. He's 9-2, 6 fight win streak. Phil Haas' last loss was in 2007 to Julian Marquez, who we just saw have a crazy comeback fight in 258. So that was the last fight he lost, and that was in 2017. Same thing with Imanov. I see Phil Haas taking this. I feel like he's going to knock out Imanov. I just have a gut reaction. He again, kind of like Aspinall, he's not getting out of the first round quickly. In most of his fights, he's fought for UFC, Brave Combat, Brave CF, Bellator, Dana White's Contender Series. He's a wrestler with dynamite hands, keeps the fight standing. And if he keeps the fight standing and capitalizes on his wrestling skills by faking and mixing in takedown attempts, he's going to keep Imanov on his heels. And, you know, Imanov's not no slouch on the ground either. But I think that if he can take Haas into the earlier rounds, he's going to have to test his gas tank. Kind of like what we talked about with Arlovsky and Aspinall. My pick is Phil Haas KO round 2.
This one is an interesting fight for me because first you got Phil Haas. He fights at Harnox 365 gym. He got into the UFC with his second attempt on the Dana White Contender Series. His first attempt was the loss that he had to Marquez. That was the first attempt where he got knocked out, I believe. Then he made it on the second attempt, which he won by knockout. Haas, he has power. That's obviously his biggest threat is his power punching in his hands and then his wrestling. He has a power wrestling game where he can force his opponents to the ground. He'll be ready to uncork at any time, and when he lands it, usually the guy gets knocked down if he gets a clear shot. And then, especially on the takedown attempts, he's really good with that. But he has a knack for gassing out in the third due to using too much energy early on. He tends to expel too much energy in those takedowns and power punching. So by the third round, he's usually just tired. He's gassed out. He tries to get the first two rounds, and if he doesn't win, like knock the guy out, then he usually takes the third round off because he's tired. Now with Imabov, he fights out of MMA Factory. He's on a 6-fight win streak with 2 TKOs and 2 submissions. He has the ground advantage, having worked a lot of time in the clinch and then on his back, and he is good at the distance games. He tries to use his distance against these type of fighters to limit the damage. He's very well-rounded. If he can move around, that's his best chance of winning. If he can move around, not be within striking distance, or if he can keep it close to avoid the takedowns, because you don't get that. Phil Haas likes to get that running start at guys. At first, I thought I was going to go with Haas because I thought he was going to go and knock out Imabov, but then I thought about it, and really, I feel like Imabov is going to use the distance. He's going to take Haas down and then get into the ground a pound. And then he's going to wear Haas out by putting pressure on him. He's done that before. And then that's been a thing with Haas. Like he's prone to being taken down as well. And I feel like Imabov will win this by decision just for that. I feel like he, with this well-rounded game, he doesn't have to focus on just one thing. Whereas Haas, he kind of focuses on the power game, where he throws too much on his punches, and then he tries to go for the takedowns. I feel like if he can get a takedown on Imabov, I feel like Imabov can turn it and reverse it, and then get get the clinch on top of Haas. Whereas I don't feel like Haas can do that back to Imabov, and that's where I have Imabov by decision. But if Haas can connect on one, I feel like he can knock him out. I do feel that way. But it's if he can get to that point or not. It depends on how long they're standing up and training shots with each other. Because I feel like Imabov will try and get this to the ground early. That's his best bet.
Yeah. When you have someone like Halls who specializes in wrestling, it and Ivanov, who is deadly on the ground. I mean, his last two submission wins were rear naked choke and a key lock. You don't really see key locks that often. It all depends on who can control the top game.
Yeah.
If, like you said, if Halls gasses out quickly, Ivanov, the longer of the two men, he's 6'3 versus 6 foot, he can just kind of slip out, use the cage to his advantage with those long legs, and then get take the back. So Halls is going to, if it goes to the ground, like you said, it is reliant on who goes to the ground, right? If Ivanov takes it to the ground, or Halls has to utilize his wrestling and try to get to the top or keep it standing. If he can't keep it standing, then, you know, you're down there with, he's called the Russian sniper for a reason. You know what I mean? This man's going to take your neck.
Yeah. And then Halls is 32 to where Ivanov is only 24. So he has that 8 to 10 year youth on his side where he probably has a little bit more energy in the tank than Halls does, to where if he's put on his back, he's not going to expel as much energy as Halls will, because Halls has that problem where he expels too much.
But Halls might have been in those positions more since he is the older veteran. He's been wrestling for, you know, these UFC wrestlers have been wrestling since they were peewees. So he's probably been wrestling his whole life. He's been put in these dangerous situations. Yeah. And maybe the savvy vet who's fought for, you know, he's fought for Bellator before, another professional company. He's fought for Brave CF, and he's continuously fighting for these competitions and these productions. And now he's in the UFC, and, you know, he had a big win versus Malkoon with punches. And
I'm
riding with Phil Halls, Megatron.
Megatron.
Yeah.
Yep. And going from that middleweight matchup to the third fight, which is another heavyweight matchup. And then you just talking about a veteran. This guy epitomizes a veteran.
Yeah.
We got Alexei Olenek versus Chris Daukaus. And just like I said, in a heavyweight matchup. How do you feel about this fight?
This is like identical to the Arlovski and Aspinall fight for me. These are guys that are kind of split, like one split with wins and losses, where Olenek is 2-3 in his last five, but he's been fighting championship contenders with Overeem, Harris, the Crochet Boss, Mo Green, Fabricio Verdum, and Derek Lewis. Whereas Aspinall has been, or Daukaus, I'm sorry, has been 4-1 his last five. He's a 3-fight win streak, and he's been fighting fairly new names for UFC fans and for combat sports fans. I see Daukaus winning this because I think there's less tape on Daukaus. But in order for him to win, he needs to avoid the ground. If this goes to the ground, Olenek is going to submit him quickly. You know, they call him the boa constrictor for a reason. He is lethal on the ground. So if Daukaus can start quick, mix in some knees, mix in some elbows, establish control, establish the pace, then I think he's going to wear down Olenek, who is the older of the two gentlemen. But as we just said, age really doesn't matter sometimes. Yes. If Alexei can get this to the ground, it's game over in my mind. That's all she wrote. But I'm riding with Daukaus. I think youth is going to win this one. I think power is going to win this one because, like I said, there's not a lot of tape on his last five, which have only gone to past round one once.
Yeah, this one was crazy because you're just talking about taking it to the ground. He should have a chance to win. In his last fight against Derek Lewis, he took it to the ground and then he got knocked out.
Yeah.
After he got it took Lewis to the ground. So, like, it's a little half true and whatnot, because it's very tough with them because you don't know what you're going to get out of Alexei Olenek. We got Alexei Olenek, who fights out of Roos Fighting MMA, and he has a 4th degree black belt in jiu-jitsu and is an international master of sports in combat sambo. If anybody knows sambo, just think of Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's one like the best at sambo, and even Khamzat Chimaev, he knew sambo. All those guys in Russia,
yeah, they those train Dagestani them. Guys.
Yeah, they all of them train all about that. That's like the bread and butter. He's 8-5 in the UFC. In his last fight, he got knocked out by Derek Lewis, but he was able to get the ground game going. It's just that he got caught because Derek Lewis has improved his cardio. We'll talk about Derek Lewis a little bit later on.
Yeah,
he's going to want to get the fight to the ground and use his strengths to tire out Dockhouse and try and go for a submission. Then you got Chris Dockhouse's opponent, who fights out of Martinez BJJ. He is 2-0 in his career with the UFC, and both those wins were by finishes. He either finished or been finished in his pro career. So it's either he's going to knock them out or they're going to knock him out. It's always been one or the other. He has great striking and should be looking to stay on the outside and pick his shots. He's going to want to hit him, but with how scary Olenek's ground game is, he's kind of want to play from like a distance and pick and choose when he wants to strike. He doesn't want to go in there guns blazing unless it's a thing he wants to do from the start. Like they say, go fight, and then he goes rushing in right away and does that. That's the only time that it'll be perfect for him to do that, to catch Olenek off guard. He's going to want to stay on the outsides, move around, get on Olenek's sides and strike him. That way he can't get in perfect position to go for the takedown, because he's always going to be on Olenek's side instead of right in front of him. Where I feel like the fight's going to go is, I feel like Olenek's going to struggle with the striking. It's going to get caught a couple of times, but I feel like Dockhouse is going to slip up. He's going to slip up, and instead of staying on the sides, he's going to try and strike up right in front of him. And then when he misses one time, I feel like Olenek's going to catch him, take him down, and keep the fight on the ground. And then I feel like he's going to win by a second round submission. Okay. I feel like he's going to be able to get to a point where he's going to tire Dockhouse out, because he's going to, being that he's not young, but being that young in the UFC, he's going to want to try and prove a point, kind of like what Aspinall is going to do. But I feel like Aspinall has not the respect, but he has
the better pedigree
with his boxing, where he's going to stay unselfish. He's not going to go in for the kill right away. He's going to pick and choose his spots because of who he's trained from, and Tyson Fury. Whereas with Dockhouse, he's a little bit of an unknown still. He's 10-3, but he's only 2-0, and I feel like this is his big chance. And I feel like he's going to come out good, but I feel like he's going to slip up because he's still a youngin in the UFC. Olenek's going to know what to do.
Yeah, it depends on how you go into this, though. I look back at the Olenek Mo Green fight, where after Mo Green got submitted round two by an armbar, he said, listen, I focus solely on Olenek's ground game. And that's what I was avoiding, takedowns, avoiding the Sambo.
Yeah.
If Dawkins is going into this and say, he's already thinking, avoid the ground, that's all that's in his head, then he's not going to be able to execute his game plan. So he has to start early. He has to set the tone. And maybe just, you're going up against a guy who's deadly on the ground, just go for broke in the first round. I'm not a fighter, but going up against Olenek, who has been proven that he can be caught, I would go for broke. And two of his last three losses, were round one knees. If Dawkins can throw knees, I don't know if he's the same type of fighter with his knees like Overeem is. We know Overeem is just a cyborg, but if Dawkins can mix in knees in early, he can just catch Olenek slipping and it could be all she wrote.
The difference I see of this is the two losses that he had, like you said, the knees, those were top guys in the division.
He's only, Alexei, his last five, he's been fighting top guys.
Yeah.
And Dawkins has. That's the thing. It's always, he's ranked number 10 for a reason. Yeah. Olenek is.
So we have to see how he does with this pressure. But like you said, I see Olenek winning by second round submission, but he is prone to that early knockout by Dockhouse if he doesn't cover up. He tends to go for the submission and then he leaves his head open, and then all Dockhouse has to do is get that elbow out a back elbow, and then Lennox prone to get stunned by that. Yeah. And then all he has to do after that is get in position and then get a nice shot in, and then that's all it takes to get a Lennox. He doesn't have the best chin in the division, so it just takes one shot. That's how I feel like with some of these heavyweights. Some of them have either have good chins or they have very bad chins.
Yeah, because they're fighting nothing but power every time they step into.
Takes so much power, your chin's going to disintegrate. Just look at Alistair Overeem.
Yeah.
He has glass chin now where it used to be very good. But to move from that to our fourth match on the card, which is a featherweight match. Yeah, featherweight matchup between Derek Minner versus Charles Rosa. How do you feel about this fight?
Yeah, this one is the one that I feel could go either way just because of their fighting styles. Charles Rosa, 13-4, 3-2 his last five, but he's fought studs. You know, Kyle Bochniak, Shane Burgos, Manny Bermudez, Bryce Mitchell, and Kevin Aguilar. Whereas Derek Minner, he's fought some known guys. He's fought Herbert Burns, who we know is a beast. Terrence McKinney, Charlie Dubre, Grant Dawson, TJ Laramie, and he's 25-11, 3-2 in his last five. So these guys are looking to keep the momentum. These both, they're hungry guys in a stacked division who need a big win, and either one of these guys could be a big win to each other. I know Charles Rosa is the 175 favorite, but I'm going the opposite. I'm going Derek Minner. I think he's going to use his ground game to capitalize on Rosa. Either in his last five, he's either been submitted or submitted somebody. You know, a guillotine, another choke, and a triangle in his last three wins. And I think he's going to capitalize on the ground, and he needs to disguise his takedowns, because if he just goes in there, look at shooting for takedowns, I think Rosa's going to be able to stop him. On Rosa's part, I think if he keeps it standing and establishes distance using those calf kicks that we've been seeing countless times over the past year, how deadly they can be. And they can really negate takedowns. So I just think that Charles Rosa needs to keep it standing in order for him to win this fight. But I'm going to go Minner with a submission.
Yeah, this was a very good fight to just do research on. Yeah, Derek Minner, who fights out disorderly conduct in Nebraska. He's a submission artist who loves to go for takedowns. What's crazy about this is you see on the screen, he's only 30 compared to Rosa's 34, but he's fought a lot more than Rosa has professionally. He's 25-11, 22 of those wins have been by submission, which is a phenomenal number. Like, you don't see a guy winning that many by submission. So obviously he's good on his ground. He's going to want to get the fight to the ground and keep it there, because he's going to want to use that to his advantage with the submissions that he gets, because obviously getting 22 shows that you know how to lock one in wherever and whatever position you're at. Then you got Charles Rosa, who fights out of American Top Team. He's known for his jiu-jitsu, but has a hard time defending the takedown from wrestlers. That's a big point, that his takedown defense is really bad. He's traded wins and losses ever since he came into the UFC. He moved up to lightweight for a little while, and then right before his last fight, he moved back down to featherweight to get back to a better position, because he was out of weight and whatnot. He's going to want to avoid the close contact and strike from a distance. Where I see this going is with how bad his takedown defenses, I feel like Derek Minner is going to use that to his advantage. He's going to go in for the takedown whenever he gets a chance. Because Rosa doesn't defend it well, he's going to take him down early, often apply pressure. I feel like he's going to start out, get him down, put his elbow to Rosa's throat to try and get him to lose energy and to lose air. And I feel like he's going to try and lock in some sort of submission, whether it's an armbar or a guillotine, or get him into a position where he's trying to get out from guard, and he's going to let his back wide open for a choke. And I feel like
the blueprint's there for Minner. If you go back two fights in Rose's career, he fought Bryce Mitchell, who is 100% a ground game guy. Now, Minner and Mitchell, I don't think are in the same category. I haven't watched enough of Minner to know if he's at Mitchell's level, but that's the approach that if I were Derek Minner, I would just go in and say, all right, well, thank you, Bryce Mitchell. You laid down the blueprint on how to get this guy down to the ground and how to get this guy down to the ground early. So if he just follows that, I don't know how much tape these guys watch. You know what I mean? It's not like, it's not like football where you get the weeks of tape for your opponent. I don't know. Some of these guys don't even watch tape and they just go in there and they say, he's a wrestler. I'm going to stop the takedowns. I'm confident in my abilities. If Minner just looks at how Mitchell did it, then, you know, what's Rosa going to be able to do?
I will say with the Bryce Mitchell fight, he took that fight on like 6 days notice.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So he didn't have time to prepare and it was, it just didn't look good, but he learned from it. He was able to bounce back and then, you know, get a win from it. Cause I believe that was his debut was against Mitchell. He made the OC. He lost that because he took it on very short notice, but then he bounced back from it and won. But then, like before, he's been kind of win-loss, win-loss.
Yeah, absolutely. His last five are win against Kyle Bochniak, lost to Shane Burgos, win to Manny Bermudez, lost to Bryce Mitchell, and then split decision win to Aguilar.
If he can have any success, it would be if he can defend any bit of the takedown.
Yeah, he needs to negate that takedown early and often.
And then he needs to try and clip Minner. If he can clip him, get him stunned, he can get him off of his game, and then he can get into his game.
Yeah.
So he's not too busy thinking about defending the takedown. He can go into striking and go into his jiu-jitsu and use that against Minner.
Yeah, so, you know what this kind of reminds me of? You remember when Moraes fought Sterling?
Yes.
And it was that brutal knee, right? Sterling's a ground guy, BJJ, he wrestles. All those Cerro Longo guys are primarily wrestlers, and then they just have great hands. I feel like this is going to be reminiscent of that. And if Rosa wants to survive, like I said earlier, implement calf kicks, you know, hobble his wheels so he can't shoot for takedowns as often as he wants to, but also incorporate knees. Threaten that knee, threaten a flying knee, threaten knees often to let him know, like, listen, you shoot, I'm going to cave your skull in.
Yeah, a lot of the fighters now are incorporating the leg kicks in because they know if you kick so much, you're going to slow the guy down. It's like, it's funny when I think of that, the two guys that kind of, I wouldn't say pioneered it in the present UFC were Edson Barbosa and Jose Aldo, two Brazilians. I remember watching Barbosa early on. And one of his fights, he beat a guy because he kicked him in the foot so much with so much speed that the guy couldn't stand anymore and he just quit.
Yeah, you're seeing the game evolve. The calf kicks, the I don't even know, the collarbone strikes that Connor's been throwing. And even after Usman fought Masvidal the first time, the foot stomps. You know, these are people, are younger fighters are watching these. They're watching these champions. They're watching these contenders and saying, okay, that's how they get there. That's how I'm going to get there. And they replicate that.
Yeah. And then you even saw Poirier with his kicks. It wasn't just a leg kick. He was pinpointing it to a certain area, trying to hit him on the side of the knee, like right under the knee.
Yeah. And the calf.
Or right above it. And then he was just going back and forth because if you hit the knee, as you saw happened to Anderson Silva against Wyman, it hurts you. But if you get him under and above, you're fine. And then at the same time, you hit a guy so many times there, it's going to bruise. And then over time, it's going to slow him down because it's going to start hurting him because he's repeatedly getting hit in the same spot.
Yeah.
And then when you slow him down, because he's a takedown artist or submission guy, it's going to immobilize him because he can't go with the speed that he wants to.
Yeah, I feel like I'm paralyzed when I have a calf cramp.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine getting kicked by somebody who's, you know, been doing karate or whatever their whole life, and they're going to shatter your leg from the back?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Just look at McGregor. Like, he was using his box, and he wasn't blocking, and he couldn't move that much because he got hit so much by Poirier. And Poirier doesn't have that much power in his kicks. Because he doesn't do that much.
Yeah.
It's just imagine
Connor and Gaethje. it's game over. Like, he's going to break his legs.
And that's going into the Usman Burns fight from Saturday. That's what happened with the Burns. He got kicked by Usman, who learned it from Gaethje because they're training partners now in Denver, Colorado. He learned that from Gaethje, applied it into his game plan now, which was new. Burns didn't know it was coming because he added it to it, and he slowed him down. And then, like, people were saying, like, he shot a shot, and then after the first round, and then slowed down, kind of like the McGregor thing. And then I tell him he slowed down because of those those leg kicks, and because he was getting hit with those leg kicks, he brought his guard down, and then that's when he started getting hit with the jabs.
Yeah,
and because he added that to it, he didn't just have to worry about the jabs, and then getting pinned against the gate. He had to worry about those kicks all of a sudden now, which he didn't expect. Like, you add something to your repertoire that the guy doesn't know about, you got to change your game plan.
Yeah, and I think that's what Rosa's going to do.
Yeah,
I think he's going to come out. He's going to start throwing calf kicks, and then Minner's going to be like, "Oh wow, that hurts. Maybe I should focus on him a little bit more than just shooting for takedowns."
Mm-hmm. But to go from that to the co-main event that we have on this card, which is a pretty good women's bantamweight fight between Caitlin Vieira against Yana Kunitskaya. How do you see this going?
Yeah, man, it seems like every fight on this card is contrast of styles and disciplines. Vieira is fantastic on the ground. She's got that BJJ in her back pocket, and Kunitskaya is more of a kickboxer. But we were talking before, Kunitskaya is with Thiago Silva Santos, so maybe she's, you know, brushing up on more BJJ. They're both in a line for, if they win, they could be close to that title shot. They're both ranked in the top 10. Ketlin's number 6 and Yana's number 8. Ketlin's 11-1, 4-1 in her last 5. Kunitskaya is 13-5-1, 3-2 in her last 5. I think it's going to be a Vieira win, unanimous decision. I think it's going to go to distance. She's a black belt in both judo and BJJ. If she can stand up, or if she can stand Yana's stand up, then she's going to take it right to the ground, catch her early and often, and just try and get the sub. Whereas Kunitskaya can push the pace, utilize more kicks, like I said, avoid takedowns. If she stays active and point fights, if this goes the distance, Kunitskaya can win by decision, which she has done in the past with Marion Reynaud and Lena Landsberg and Stolarenko in her last fight that went the distance. I'm gonna ride with Caitlin Vieira.
What's crazy to me is how much of a favorite Vieira is, -275. That's a big margin to be favorite in this matchup. And I see Caitlin Vieira. She fights out of Team Nova Une Manes. Probably said it wrong. Don't care.
You did great.
Yeah. Vieira is more of a submission artist, with nearly half of her wins professionally coming on the ground. There's no doubt that she's going to see the fight play out that way, and she's going to avoid staying up for too long of a time. But one of her lacks is against strikers. She's weak against striking.
Yeah.
And what is Kunitskaya? She's a striker. Then we got Kunitskaya, who fights out Team Fighting Spirit Gym. She's an orthodox striker with solid fundamentals. Kunitskaya's flow of punches and kicks are seamless yet damaging. Of course, she's with Thiago Silva, so I like to call, because of his like hammer tattoo, I like to call her Lady Thor. I like to call her that because of the big tattoo, and then they're damaging with their hits. Her punches and kicks are seamless yet damaging. In addition, she has a well-rounded ground game, but it's focused on remaining on her feet to strike. She wants to remain standing up. Her takedown defense needs a lot of improvement, but it's not horrible. It's just not great. If she has any chance of winning, she has to keep the standing up. Because if she gets taken down, Vieira's going to have the big advantage. She's going to be able to control the pace, keep her down, apply pressure, try and make Kunitskaya waste too much energy to get back up to the standing. So she's going to keep the the fight standing up. The way I see this going is I feel like early on, Konitskaya is going to connect on a good punch with Veer. She's going to get her rocked. And I feel like I'm the opposite of you. I feel like this is going to go Konitskaya by first round knockout. I feel she's going to catch her once because of the lack of defense against strikers that Veer is. She's going to catch her with one shot, and that shot's going to be big because when Konitskaya hits you, it hurts. She's going to catch her. She's going to get her down, and then she's going to finish the fight. It's going to – I feel like it's only going to last like 2-3 minutes.
Wow. I mean, they both have been knocked out recently. Vieira was knocked out by Aldana, and Konitskaya was knocked out by Ladd, both of which are ranked ahead of them. I think Ladd's number 3 and Aldana's what, 5. Do you think after the winner, let's say you go with Konitskaya, does she skyrocket up to get a like number 1 contendership, or do you see her fighting someone like Juliana Pena, Aldana, someone like that, or even Holly Holm, who's kind of sitting idle?
Well, it depends, because I know Aldana has a fight coming up. She might be fighting Ladd, I think. I have to look at it later on, but I know they just booked her fight, and it's coming up in March, I believe it is.
Yeah, and I mean, we know that at this point, the rankings really don't mean anything when it comes to getting a title shot. I mean, you have Megan Anderson going up against Nunez soon. So, you know,
I believe that's just a matter of Nunez cleaning up the division, and then she needs somebody to fight new.
Well, she hasn't fought Tejeda yet. When they brought her in, that was like, it was like, remember when Cyborg was dominating and they brought like Lena Landsberg, they brought Konitskaya in, they start feeding Tanya Evinger, they start feeding these girls to Cyborg. Ketlin Vieira was brought in, and they're like, this might be the answer for Amanda because of her ground game.
Yeah, you got a point there. I feel like whoever wins this is going to get like a top 3 matchup. I don't think they'll get that title fight right away, especially when Nunez is fighting in a couple weeks.
Yeah, she's fighting Megan Anderson, right?
Yeah. And then the next fight, she could be defending the other belt. Yeah. So, because she has both. But like, it could go either way because how the rankings are, I think they have both the bantamweight and featherweight all in one ranking because they don't really have a featherweight ranking system on the website. They just have them all on the one ranking spot on bantamweight.
Yeah.
So it's all crazy how the rankings are. So it depends on, I feel like Nunez, if she wins this, she'll go to defend the other belt. So I feel like whoever wins this, we'll have to face like a Holly Holm or De Ramin.
Yeah. Durandame.
Yeah. To get and then if they win that, then they will get a title shot.
Yeah. I'd like Durandame and Holm to get that rematch that we've been waiting for years, right? Yeah. And like the winner of this to fight Juliana Pena, who had a standout her last fight and then called out the champ and said, I want you next. You've been ducking me. I'd like Pena to get that next fight against the winner of these and then put her up against Holly and the winner of that.
Yeah. And it's a little off topic, but I'm waiting for them to have Zhang Shi finally defend her belt again after, because it's been a year. I've seen Nunez defend both of our belts. I've seen Shevchenko, and then I heard that they've been waiting on being able to fight. They've been waiting on her, not her, but they've been waiting on clearance to go to China because they want her to defend it there so they can hit that market. But I feel like what they need to do is just do it on Fight Island. They'll probably go back there in the spring, just book that, get her a fight there with the Rose Namajunas because they need to fight because it's been over a year, actually a year now, right now. It's been a year up to this date now since she fought Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Yeah, and we've seen Chinese fighters make the trek to Fight Island, like Li Jingliang. He fought in Abu Dhabi, so I'd like to see Zhang Weili go over there too. Yeah. Not that she's holding the belt hostage because of COVID, but I understand your frustration with it because she's a beast and you want to see Rose, who's also a beast, go up against each other.
Yeah, and she's only fought 3-4 times in the UFC, which is crazy when you think about it. It's just that she put so much of an impression on the audience that she was able to get that title shot right away. She dominated it, and then she dominated Joanna Jędrzejczyk right afterwards.
Yeah, she's a blood and guts fighter, man. She's a dominator. You're right. She's absolutely a dominator.
And then that's why, like, I understand why they want to wait to get the fight in China, because she can bring in that whole Chinese audience in into it. But we don't know when you're going to have audience and when you can do that again. So the best bet is to just get them on Fight Island, a neutral area where you can have it halfway and halfway between China and Vegas.
Yep.
And she can still be able to go and defend it. And then maybe by the next fight, if she wins, they can do it in China.
Yeah.
Because I don't want them to wait like 2 years to fight, because then that whole division is going to get held up that way.
Yeah. And when she turns into Leon Edwards, who doesn't fight because of COVID and other reasons, you know.
And now he wants to fight, and then we got, that's a whole different story with that now.
They just announced that he's got an opponent.
Did they announce exactly who it is? Because I know they're
Bilal Muhammad. Remember the name, Bully B.
I like him. And
I do too.
Because he just fought.
Fought last week.
Yeah, and then I told a buddy of mine right after the fight, I was like, watch this name, because this guy's good.
And he's been good for a while. I'm a fan of him.
And so it's good, because I know they've been, it was holed up because between Chimaev getting hurt, and now he's in the U.S. now. He's coming to the U.S. to get treatment for it on the UFC's dime.
Yeah, they said June was the latest, or the earliest for Kazmat to fight.
Between that and then Colby Covington weighing on basically Masvidal in that situation, because he feels like he should get a shot. Like I just watched a whole 8-minute interview with Chael Sonnen, where he said that he's put in a bad situation where he's damn if he do, damn if he don't. Yeah. Where he should have taken the fight, but he knows that he should be getting more than that, because Edwards hasn't been fought. So
I hear you.
But moving from that to the main event of the evening, which we got a heavyweight matchup between Curtis Razor Blades and Derek the Beast, Black Beast Lewis. How do you see this going?
Yeah, I'm going to steal a line that you just said, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And I feel like that's where Curtis Blades is right now, because if you look at the current landscape of the heavyweight division, it might be the most frustrating in the UFC right now. You have Stipe, who undoubtedly is doing the most noble thing and going out there and being a first responder as your champion. He's finally going to fight Ngannou, which is going to be a huge fight. Then for Curtis Blades, if he wins this fight, he's going to have to wait, because now John Jones is next, because he's making his debut. He's a bigger money fighter. So he's second in line or third in line for this title. He's gone on a tear. He's been winning, but now he's going to have to wait at least a year to get another shot. So he's going to have to stay active. I'm riding with Curtis Blades, because I think he's going to wear out Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis has a 53% takedown defense. And if we know anything about Curtis Blades, and if you go back to that Volkov fight, he can make a fight boring and he can take it right to the ground. And that's what he did with Volkov. He rode him for 5 rounds on the ground, but then he can mix it up. You know, when he fights older guys like JDS, he mixes knees and punches. He fought Abdur Rahimov, and he ground and pounded him. He beat Justin Willis, and then he lost. His only losses are to Ngannou, if I'm not mistaken.
Twice.
Yeah. So I feel like, let's say Ngannou loses to Stipe, and it's Stipe and Jones, you're going to get the trilogy with Blades and Ngannou, right, for number one contendership. On the other hand, I love Derek Lewis, because I want him to win every fight he has, because I want to hear him on a hot mic, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I just think that if in order for Derek Lewis to win, he has to be creative. And we've known that he's worked on his takedown defense, like you said, with Alexei Oleinik. He has been quicker, if that makes any sense, like throwing knees and like spinning back fists and like capoeira stuff in recent fights. So if he could be creative, stuff these takedowns, which in my mind are incredibly impossible when you're fighting someone like Curtis Blaydes, and just keep it standing. He can clip him and he can win, but I think this is going to be a Blaydes route, unanimous decision.
See, you pointed out one great thing when you were just talking about this is how crazy this heavyweight division is. Everybody has fought each other once almost, and then with this fight, this is the one matchup where we haven't really seen them fight each other. Yeah. This is the first time they'll be fighting. Blaydes fought and his two losses were both to Francis Ngannou. Lewis has fought Stipe and Ngannou. The one Ngannou messed up where he didn't look his best was when he lost to Derek Lewis.
Yeah, that was a weird fight.
And then, like, it's been a parody where everybody has fought everybody. And then even Sarginio, he lost to Ngannou. But then he beat Overeem, who just lost to Volkov, who lost to Blaydes.
Yeah.
Because of his wrestling. So it's like, you got all this mess up. And then what can make this even worse is if Blaydes wins this, you would think that if Blaydes has his way, you would hope he would hope that Stipe would win. Because you know right away, if Ngannou wins, he's not going to get that Chorji fight because he lost twice to Ngannou.
Yeah.
And that's where they would give him Jones. But they've said, Dana White came out and said Jones is going to get that that fight of whoever wins Stipe and Ngannou. But then 2 days later, Jones comes out and said that he might want a tune-up fight. So I could see that point where he said Jones could fight Blaydes if he wins.
Yeah, but like, what happens to the rest of that division? You know what I mean? That's the big thing. You got Jones jumping up a weight class, right? If Ngannou loses, do you think Dana's going to say, well, the fight to make is Curtis Blaydes, who has pissed him off in the past with how boring his fights have been, versus Jon Jones,
where he's going to be like, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, I think the fight to make if Jones wants a tune-up fight is he's going to fight Ngannou. And that, like, they fight, these guys fight in March, and then in the summer, Ngannou's going to fight, if he loses, Ngannou's going to fight Jones. But yeah. I don't see Jones taking a warm-up fight. I think if Stipe wins, he's going to go right after Stipe.
Well, I think no matter who wins, Jones is going to win him. But yeah. I think the wild card here is if Ciryl Gane beats Rozenstruik, I think that they would be like, if Blaydes wins, they would give Blaydes Gane right away.
Yeah.
They would be
whoever wins this fight is going to get the winner of that fight.
Yeah, but mostly Gane, because I think Rozenstruik has fought these two guys. But going into my breakdown of this, we got Blaydes, who fights out Elevation Fight Team. He's a grappler looking to get the fight to the ground early and often, and has solid but not effective striking. I don't, when he strikes, it doesn't do much to me. Like, I feel like he's not the power guy that you think of when you think of the heavyweights with the power. Yeah, yeah. He has a tank usually, and it's usually good when he's the aggressor. Like you saw Volkov, he had 15 takedowns and didn't look like it wore him down as much as it would like the normal guy who expelling too much energy, it wears him down. He was able to do that all day. He could have done that for another two rounds. Whereas with Lewis, he fights out of Silverback Fight Club. He's a striker who's going to look to stand up, trade shots, and get out early. He's been prone to tiring out, which everybody knows, but because of his weight. But he has, since two fights ago, he hired a nutritionist. He's eat well. He's trained better. He's had a better trainer. He's lost weight. And in his last fight against Linick, he looked a lot better than what we usually see. He's tired out by the first round. And in the second round, he's usually huffing, puffing, and then just trying to last for the next two rounds. In that fight, it was into the second round, and he looked like the same going into the first round. It seems like his gas tank has improved because he's eating better and he's training better, which is a good thing to see, because he's not being stubborn to just being the way that he was. He's willing to adapt and willing to get better. And then a little wrinkle that he added into it is leg kicks. He's doing leg kicks now, which have been a big thing in his fights now. Like, that's been an improvement. And where I see this fight going, like it says, it's stylistically, it's the perfect grappler for striker pairing. You got Blades looking to take down Lewis, drag him to the canvas and work on him. Then you got Lewis, who's looking to swing, because when he hits you, they're sledgehammers. He knocks you out. People underestimate his power compared to Negreanu. That's why he beat Negreanu, because he was able to hit him. He's going to look to he's going to need to do that. He's going to need to do that, knowing that he needs to land that one punch to finish the fight. I feel like he's going to get that, and I feel it's going to be in the second round. I feel like he'll get taken down, but then I feel like Blades will lose focus, and then he's going to slip in, use those leg kicks to try and slow down Blades. That's going to be a difference in his fight. I feel like Blades hasn't had to deal with that much. He hasn't been able to have people slow him down, and I feel like those legs of Lewis are going to do it. And I feel like eventually he's not going to be able to go for the takedown. I feel like Lewis is going to be able to sneak in and get that knockout.
Yeah, I mean, I like Derek Lewis, so if he wins, I'm happy. I feel the one thing that we're kind of missing is championship caliber opponents, where Ngannou he's fought declining legends, or not, Blades has fought declining fighters, right? With JDS, he's fought Willis, who isn't as great as everyone was hoping he'd be, but then Derek Lewis fought Cormier. I mean, it's been a while, but he fought for the title. Blades has never been to that. He's never tasted that, where Cormier has fought, or Lewis has fought another prolific wrestler in DC, and he was challenged there, and he was exposed there. So he has the history of going up against somebody the caliber of Blades, where Blades hasn't ever, like, I would have loved to see Blades versus Cormier. I think that would have been a fantastic match, but unfortunately we're never going to see it. But like you said, if you're going with Derek Lewis, I'm happy, man. I want him to win because I want that interview. I want that interview. But I think I'm going to ride with Curtis for sure. And to be fair, I didn't look at any of the betting favorites before coming on here. And unfortunately, it seemed like I picked the winner, like the betting favorites of every fight. So, you know, I didn't do that.
Yeah. It's going to be a good fight, though, because I feel like both are going to, at one point, have to get out of their game plan to just change things up, call an audible, because I feel like Blades isn't going to be able to take down Lewis on point like he did Volkov. Volkov is just a tall, lanky guy. Yeah. Where I think he didn't get his leg kicks into it. And whereas Derek Lewis, he's a heavier guy. You're going to expel more energy, even with him slimming down a little bit, to take him down. He's a heavier guy than Volkov.
Yeah, he's probably going to walk into this fight 280 after rehydrating.
Yeah, so it's going to be harder for him to get 14 takedowns. He might get 1, 2, or 3, but he's going to expel him a lot more energy than he did last fight. And then Lewis is going to need to get his takedown defense, and he's going to need to be patient, because if he gets taken down, he's going to need to be able to do what he did against Olenek. Olenek was able to take him down, but he didn't hesitate. He didn't get crazy and everything. He was able to slip out of it, get out, and then he was able to win.
And Olenek is more dangerous on the ground with the submission attempts, where Blades is just, he'll lay on you, he'll work the body, he'll go for a couple elbows, he'll go for some hammer fists. If Lewis can weather that, it all comes down to the gas tank in Lewis at this point. He is a bigger boy, so if they take him down, is it going to be harder for him to get back up after that second round? If this goes past round one and he's continuously dominated on the floor, then I don't see Lewis getting that lucky shot. You know what I mean? Because he's going to be gassed.
I agree cold-heartedly with you. And it's going to be a very good fight card.
Yeah, it's going
to
be great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll lean up into the next one, which will be Rozenstruik Gagne fight night. I'm very looking forward to that.
Yeah.
It's another heavyweight main event.
Yes.
In the next month between those two and then the Negreanu Stipe main event on UFC 260, we're going to know the future of the heavyweight division. We're going to know where each guy's at and where we're expecting it to go in the next month or so.
They definitely need some plans because this revolving door is starting to seem very welterweight-like when Tyron Woodley was the champ and everybody was just fighting everybody and Woodley only fought Wonder Boy twice. You know what I mean? They need to really get this going. You got an active roster of exciting fighters who are main eventing two of your fight cards early in the year. You know, you gotta push these guys.
Yeah. But that is our episode for the bonus episode of Cage My IQ, where we previewed UFC fight night, Derek Lewis versus Curtis Blaydes. Don't hesitate to comment when we post this on social media, where you can find it on YouTube, Twitter, even Instagram. I'm going to post the link on the Instagram and then also Facebook. So don't hesitate to comment on the video. We'll get back to you. Let us know what you think the card's going to be like, what your picks are, and then comment your picks on the Cage My IQ Twitter page. Let us know. And then if you beat my picks, I will give you a shout out on Monday's episode. But that is our show tonight. I am your host, D-Bake. This is Jim. Don't miss out on his podcast, the Active Geek Podcast, every Wednesday. I believe they release their episodes.
Yep, and then every Wednesday and Saturday.
And then every Saturday, they've been doing a Wanda Watch where they review WandaVision. So if you like WandaVision, check out their episodes every Saturday. And then I believe after that, you're going to do the same with the Winter Soldier
Falcon and Winter Soldier. Falcon, we're calling it Saturdays with Sam and Bucky. It's our after show.
Yep. So we are tuning out. And then I will see you guys on Monday night at 8:30.
See ya.
Thank you for watching this episode of The Sports Box. Please remember to follow us on all of our social media outlets. On Facebook at Sports Box Show, Twitter at Sports Box Show, Instagram at The Sports Box Show. Find us on YouTube and join Outside the Box, our Facebook sports discussion group. The Sports Box is brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And also our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and use promo code THEBOX at sign up for 10 free points. Thanks for joining us this evening.